Hello, I'm Alton Banks for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. And now we turn the front page of this week's Triangle Business Journal and we land on the biz page as usual. And under the heading of Bowling and Beer comes the article, Georgia Company Bowling for Raleigh. Raleigh has a new place to bowl and have a beer. Georgia Bowling and Entertainment Concept Stars and Strikes recently opened as a new anchor tenant at the Ashton Square Shopping Center following a $7.1 million renovation of the space. The location at 4020 Capitol Boulevard features a restaurant and bar with bowling lanes, an arcade, laser tag, and bumper cars. Stars and Strikes had pushed back plans to open earlier because of the pandemic. The new location joins 15 Stars and Strikes spots across the Carolinas, Georgia, and Tennessee. And under the heading of survey comes the article, North Carolinians, Big Fans of Amazon. E-commerce giant Amazon has been making big investments in North Carolina in recent years, and now we might know why. North Carolinians are more obsessed with shopping on Amazon than people in any other state, according to a new study from TransImpact, which deals in technology-based solutions for the shipping and supply chain sectors. The company based in Emerald Isle surveyed people in each state and asked respondents to rate themselves using a scale of 1 to 5 for how obsessed they are with shopping on Amazon. The Tar Heel State had the highest percentage of respondents, nearly 70%, who rated themselves a 4 or 5, where 5 is the most obsessed. North Carolina was followed by Texas and Virginia in second and third place, respectively. The least obsessed state, Arkansas, the home of Walmart. And just 6% of respondents in North Carolina say they could abstain from shopping on Amazon for the rest of their lives. And under the heading of Vroom comes the article, Raceways Get State Support. The new budget approved by the state of North Carolina includes some interesting support for racetracks, including one owned by a Raleigh businessman. Charlotte Business Journal notes that the budget includes a combined $40 million for water, sewer, and other infrastructure improvements at three racetracks. The Rock Speedway in Rockingham will get $9 million, with Charlotte Motor Speedway getting $13 million and North Wilkesboro getting $18 million. The Rockingham Speedway is owned by Rockingham Properties, LLC, and led by Raleigh's Dan Loewenheim. According to the Richmond County Daily Journal, Loewenheim's group bought the Speedway for $2.8 million in 2018 from Florida-based BK Rock Holdings. Speedway Motorsports of Concord owns the other two tracks. Rockingham hasn't hosted a major NASCAR race since 2004, and North Wilkesboro since 1996. And under the heading of Legacy Spot comes the article, Iconic Winston-Salem Tower Gets New Name. A tower in Winston-Salem that was once the tallest in the state and a symbol of the city's economic strength is getting a new name. The 30-story Winston Tower opened in 1966 as the headquarters of Wachovia Bank and Trust. But the Wachovia brand was folded into First Union based in Charlotte and eventually Wells Fargo. Now Winston-Salem is seeing a resurgence, and Triad Business Journal is reporting that Truliant Federal Credit Union, based in Winston-Salem, will acquire the naming rights of the 30-story building. The tower is currently 60% occupied. And closing out our biz page for this week, under the heading of New Concept, comes the article, Mom Launches College Blanket Business. UNC Chapel Hill gave a Charlotte mom with a bright idea a big break in 2018 when the school's licensing department approved her product. Years before, Lana Truong sent her son off to the University of Southern California and went looking for a comfortable, fun blanket in USC colors. She found some products for girls, but I think it was right for a boy. That was when my mind started noodling and everything started to come together, she says. Truong created a soft, two-sided blanket that is 60 inches by 80 inches, so it can be used on a bed or to hang out on a sofa. Appalachian State University agreed to let her use its university logo in 2017, and Carolina followed in 2018. I made a mock blanket, and they just felt the quality and really liked it, she says of her pitch to UNC. I was very small and was like, give me a chance, I'll do you proud. Her company, Dormitory 101, now has 12 schools, including NC State, Duke, Harvard, and Princeton universities, and East Carolina University is on the way. And she's one of many small businesses sharing their wares at the shopping spree by the Junior League of Raleigh at the NC State Fairgrounds, December the 2nd through the 5th. Truong says sales this year are just under 1,000 blankets, driven by online sales. Getting to that point hasn't been easy for Truong, who had no business experience. Many mistakes have been made, she says. But Dormitory 101 is viable and growing as she adds help. I want to empower women, says Truong, noting that there are many women like her who gave up careers to raise children. We know so much from raising our family, and we have a lot of value to add to society. Next, we turn the page and we get to the Greater Triangle Growth column. This page, as you may know, is a recent addition to the Triangle Business Journal. And under the heading of Johnston County comes the article, Developer Grabs Nearly 50 Acres for Industrial Use. A local real estate company plans to bring much-needed industrial space to Johnston County. Ironwood Developers, an LLC addressed to Clayton's Waltham Group, has purchased 46.7 acres in Johnston County for $920,000, according to a deed filed November 17th. The land sits near Interstate 95, where it intersects Keene Road south of downtown Four Oaks. Norwood Thompson, a Waltham partner, says his firm is looking to build a total of 300,000 square feet of industrial space on the land. This project will help the Four Oaks Business Park with easy access off exit 87 on I-95, Thompson says. The first building will be 80,000 square feet, Thompson says, and is being built for a manufacturing client. He declined to identify the manufacturing company. And the other article on today's Greater Triangle Growth page is under the heading of Revitalization. The article's entitled, Will History Repeat? Back in its heyday, the Cherry Hotel was a place to be in downtown Wilson. Now the city and a development team are looking to restore the more than century-old hotel back to its former glory. It'll be the hub of hospitality and events in downtown Wilson, says David Tart, managing partner at Rains, which is redeveloping the hotel. COVID has delayed the project's timeline, Tart says. As it stands now, Rains is undergoing some pre-development work with a goal of having a contractor on site by the first or second quarter next year. He says the rough timeline is opening the hotel in fall of 2023. The 100-room Cherry Hotel was built in 1917 and has served as a vital part of the downtown Wilson scene when the city was a major East Coast hub of the tobacco industry. But as the methods for selling tobacco changed, activity in downtown Wilson waned. Today, downtown is making a resurgence with the Vala Simpson Horligig Park, attracting residents and several big projects in the works. The Cherry Hotel hopes to both capitalize on and contribute to Wilson's downtown resurgence. Tart says the hotel will be a courtyard by Marriott, but it will leverage the building's historic aesthetic He says more than $20 million is being invested in the redevelopment. We will definitely take a unique design approach where it celebrates the Cherry Hotel and the historic asset, Tark says. It will be one of the most unique courtyards in the Southeast. It will appeal to leisure in Wilson and the business traveler. We have a really incredible ballroom in the hotel that will also cater to events and banquets. Now, next we turn the page and we reach the EcoDevo Tech page. And under it we have a couple of headings. One is Durham, the article for which is New Leader Named for Burt's Bees. Quietly, Clorox has promoted one of its own to run Burt's Bees, its Durham-based subsidiary dedicated to natural cosmetics. The new leader, Mariah Eckhart, is a 16-year veteran of the company, having steadily risen through the communications and marketing organization. When Matt Gregory, the previous head of the Burt's Bees unit, was promoted to chief customer officer and senior vice president of health and beauty at Clorox, Eckhart got the call. She says the fact that Clorox has accumulated so many leaders in Durham, including Gregory, who will remain in the Triangle, speaks to Clorox's emphasis on the region. In addition to Eckhart and Gregory, Cheryl Banks, SVP and Chief Information and Enterprise Analytics Officer, is based in the Triangle. And the other major heading on our EcoDevo Tech page is Adding Jobs. The article is entitled Triangle on a Roll. 2021 has been a banner year for the state's two largest metros, but the Triangle, with projects such as Apple, PennyMac, and Fujifilm Diosynth Biotechnologies, stands to walk away the winner in terms of the number of jobs promised. And the picture could get even rosier, as Chris Chung, CEO of the Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina, recently said 213 customers are currently considering North Carolina for expansions or relocation. If North Carolina were to win all of them, that's 74,000 new jobs and $69 billion in investment. A sweep of project announcements out of North Carolina Department of Commerce shows the Charlotte area, when you include adjacent metros Gastonia and Concord, has won 6 incentivized projects in 2021, the largest being Credit Karma's 600-job operation. The Triangle, however, has pumped out 10 incentivized wins, including the 3,000-job Apple Campus in Research, Triangle Park. There's a little sidebar with this article. The sidebar is entitled Closer Look, and it delineates the top 5 largest projects announced in the Triangle so far in 2021. So there's Apple, promised 3,000 jobs in RTP, $1 billion investment in exchange for up to $845.8 million in incentives. Secondly is Google, promised 1,000 jobs in Durham. The company did not pursue incentives. The third, Fujifilm Diosynth Biotechnologies, promised 725 jobs in Holly Springs, a $2 billion investment in exchange for up to $19.7 million in incentives. The fourth is Fidelity Investments, promised 500 jobs in RTP and did not pursue incentives. And finally, the Invitae Group, INVITAE, Invitae Corporation, promised 374 jobs in Morrisville, a $114.6 million investment in exchange for up to $6.8 million in incentives. Well, let's turn the page. We land on the real estate page, and Caleb Harshberger has a couple of articles in here of interest, one of which is under the heading of Repurpose. The article is entitled Defunct Kroger to Become Life Sciences Hub. The vacant shell of a former Kroger store in Midtown Raleigh is set to become a life sciences hub. Chapel Hill-based developer East West Partners has unveiled plans for the Midtown BioCenter, calling for the transformation of the location at 350 East Six Forks Road into 100,000 square feet of lab and life sciences space. East West Partners paid $13 million for the property recently, according to senior managing partner Lee Perry. The Kroger store closed in August of 2018, and the seller spent the next 3 years struggling to find a retail tenant. In September, the U.S. Postal Service said it would close its location at the site. And under the heading of Big Number comes the article, 21%. Triangle home prices jumped a staggering 21% year over year in October, despite a 9% year over year drop in home sales and average mortgage rates ticking up to 3.04%, according to a report by local real estate appraiser Stacy Ann Vinson. And under the heading of Historic Digs comes the article, Empire Properties Adds Fayetteville Street Building. Raleigh-based Empire Properties acquired the 11-story Raleigh building at the southwest corner of West Hargett and Fayetteville Streets, across from the Wells Fargo Capital Center, for $12.37 million on November the 22nd. Empire Properties managing partner Greg Hatem says he has had his eye on the property for some time now. We had known the owners for years and had worked together with them because we all owned similar buildings, Hatem says. It was kind of unspoken. If you were ever going to sell, let us know. And it popped up one day and they said, you know, I'm ready. Built in 1915, the 72,300 square foot Raleigh building features 10 stories of office over ground level retail. And finally, on the real estate page for this week, under the heading of Daniels Property, comes the article, Developer Unveils Hayes Barton Plans. Raleigh developer Beacon Street has unveiled plans to redevelop the former site of the Josephus Daniels House and Masonic Temple in Raleigh, calling for a collection of custom homes. Earlier this month, the company released plans for Caswell Heights, calling for 11 custom homes on 3.89 acres at 1520 Caswell Street in the Hayes Barton neighborhood. Beacon Street President Jim Wiley says the plan will follow the original vision for the neighborhood. The company bought the property in March. 100 years ago, when the plan for Hayes Barton was originally conceived, this area was intended to be single-family homes. Instead, this property was a couple lots put together for the Masonic Temple, Wiley says. It was at the end of the life cycle, and that gave us an opportunity to come in. Our vision is very similar to the original vision for the neighborhood. The streets around the site are lined with single-family homes within walking distance of Five Points and other Raleigh neighborhoods. What we want to do is to build new housing, but for it to be planted back into the existing fabric of the neighborhood, Wiley says. The goal would be to be at some point indistinguishable from the existing neighborhood. Beacon Street will be working with a custom home builder and hopes to have lots ready for sale by the spring. The company did not provide any estimates on pricing. Beacon Properties bought the property in March for $3.7 million after the city of Raleigh stripped the property of its landmark status in early February following a request by the then owner, the Masonic Temple of Raleigh. The group cited Josephus Daniels' racist views in its request. The group had owned the property since 1950, according to county records. Demolition at the site kicked off in July. Next, we find ourselves on the health care and higher ed page. Under the heading of Rates Battle comes the article, Physician Group Blasts Blue Cross North Carolina. A national organization representing anesthesiologists is accusing Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina of using strong-arm tactics to convince in-network clinicians to lower their rates on the basis of an upcoming federal law. The law, called the No Surprises Act, is designed to protect patients from receiving unexpected bills from out-of-network providers at in-network facilities, which can be expensive. Congress passed it in December of 2020, and it goes into effect January 1st. The American Society of Anesthesiologists claims BCBSNC cited this law in letters, threatening to terminate its contracts with numerous anesthesiologists and other physician practices in the state unless they agreed to payment reductions. And in the other article on the healthcare higher ed page, under the heading of Adding Students, comes the article, Wolfpack's Howl Grows. NC State University plans to grow the number of students enrolled in its engineering programs by about 40% over the next 5 years to meet local workforce demands. The state budget, which Governor Roy Cooper signed November the 18th, directs $50 million to the university to facilitate this growth. The budget provides $20 million over the next 2 years to hire faculty and staff to support the addition of 4,000 students. That will push enrollment at the university's College of Engineering to 14,000 and the university's total enrollment to more than 40,000. The money will allow the university to hire 20 or so new faculty members over the next year, Chancellor Randy Woodson says. The university will then continue to add 20 to 25 faculty members each year over the next 5 years to support the larger student body. The state budget also carves out $30 million for NC State to upgrade its facilities to support students in programs such as computer science, software, molecular, and biochemical engineering. This funding is part of a state initiative called Engineering North Carolina's Future, that's intended to meet the workforce needs spurred by projects from companies such as Google, Apple, Fujifilm Diosynth Biotechnologies, and others that will create thousands of science and engineering jobs. We need to make sure we're doing everything we can to keep up with the workforce demands of our state, Woodson says. And it's not just a workforce issue. Last year, the university's College of Engineering turned down about 1,400 applicants who had a grade point average of 3.8 or higher due to a lack of space. Frequent listeners will realize that every week, Triangle Business Journal features an executive voice. This week's executive voice belongs to Jeff Bell. Bell is the head of school at Cardinal Gibbons High School. As you know, this is a Q&A column, so I'll read a little bit of background and then the questions and Bell's answers. Armed with 2 decades of experience in the private school arena, Jeff Bell now leads the efforts of the largest private school in the Triangle. Bell has been head of the school at Cardinal Gibbons High School in Raleigh since June of 2020. The school's current enrollment sits at 1575, and it employs 150 people, including faculty. Cardinal Gibbons draws students from more than 40 schools across the Triangle and has nearly doubled in size since the school moved to its current location in Edwards Mill Road in 1999, Bell says. Now here's the Q&A portion. How has your professional background prepared you for your current role? Gibbons is my second headship. I served as the founding head of school of Beacon Academy, a Montessori high school in Evanston, Illinois, from 2013 to 2020. Working in a startup environment was excellent training for Gibbons. While the scale is certainly different here, the skill set that I built while at Beacon has been extremely helpful during my first 18 months at Gibbons. The two skills that have been most useful are building relationships with colleagues and active listening. Gibbons educators have a wealth of experience. The parents are passionate about their school. The students are deeply invested in their studies and in the school culture. It's been essential to learn from them in order to effectively lead the school. How did your school navigate the pandemic, and what, if any, changes have you made permanent since COVID? Very effectively. For the majority of last year, we were in hybrid classes. Students were split into cohorts and were on campus 2 days per week, on Zoom 2 days per week, and had one remote day per week. We were still able to run many of our co-curricular activities, which made a significant difference in student and educator morale. A few changes that have become permanent are a new modified block schedule. Students now have classes for 75 minutes, and each course meets every other day. It also more clearly mirrors the college schedule. We also added an advisory program. They meet two or three days a week, and the advisor serves as a mentor and guide for the students. The goal is to make our large school a little smaller and to make sure each student has an adult that can always look to when they have academic questions or to help them navigate the inevitable turbulence that arises in high school and during adolescence. What are some of the latest initiatives at the school? His answer, shortly before the pandemic, Gibbons purchased a retreat center in Smithfield, which we call Short Journey. We completed significant renovations in advance of the 2019-20 school year, and we had just begun to fully operationalize the site when COVID struck. We continued to run retreats in a modified fashion last year, and this year we have made more adaptations so that more students and community members can use this second campus. As this program grows, we see it as a signature experience of our school. We're also in the midst of a strategic planning process with the goal to provide a clearly articulated plan by the end of the 2021-22 school year. What are your goals for Cardinal Gibbons? Gibbons is a fantastic place, and I'm blessed to have been able to come be part of the school that finds itself in a position of strength. That being said, like every institution across the country, COVID has created some challenges. In the short term, we continue to do all we can to keep our community safe and healthy while not allowing this virus to define everything we do. This year, things feel like they were 80 to 85% back to where they were pre-pandemic. It's our hope to feel 100% back by May. In the long term, we want Cardinal Gibbons to set the standard for Catholic high school education in the 21st century. We are located in an excellent diocese that is very supportive of our school. As we emerge from the pandemic and begin implementing our strategic plan, we want our academic, spiritual life, and co-curricular programs to serve as models for our fellow Catholic schools across the country. And the last question. What's the best advice you can give your students? There are two pieces of advice that I try to impart to students. One, having a strong connection to one's faith life is essential and provides a basis for a good and happy life. And two, the most successful people in the future will be the ones who understand how to use technology and social media appropriately and not be consumed by it. Next, we come to the cover story for this week's Triangle Business Journal, and it's entitled 22 Startups to Watch in 2022. Each one is discussed briefly. I'm not sure I'll be able to read all of each of the 22 startups, but here's a little bit of background. Startups, they start with a problem. A mom overwhelmed by the tidal wave of toys required to entertain a toddler. A defendant learning that no, Judge Judy is not running the court, and a surgeon overcome by the grief of a voiceless patient. Then comes the idea, a toy subscription to cut down on clutter and waste, a platform to help a litigant represent herself in court, son's attorney, an AI-fueled technology to allow patients to talk without using their own voice boxes. Startups throughout the triangle are solving a wide variety of problems, from childhood blindness to snacking without the fear of having to break out an EpiPen. And they promise to keep solving problems. In 2022, here are 22 that Triangle Business Journal is watching. First, Tiny Earth Toys, the Durham-based toy subscription startup, launched its subscription service earlier this year. And just months in, secured a $1.5 million equity funder led by Bull City Venture Partners. Rachel Classy founded the company in 2020 after seeing how her house was consumed by plastic toys. During the pandemic, she left her job at Teamworks to hunker down with her two kids, quickly saw how many toys they could accumulate. And she couldn't help but think about, in addition to the clutter they were creating, what the toys would someday mean for landfills. She saw it as a recycling problem and started turning a tiny earth toys to tackle it head on. The subscription service sends out high-quality toys made from natural materials for a four-month stretch. Families then send the toys back and get a new crate of products. As one investor, Spoonflower co-founder Stephen Fraser, puts it, Tiny Earth Toys is one of those companies that comes along with a powerful, clear idea that, as soon as you hear it, you think to yourself, why hasn't anyone done this before? Next is the Polaris Quantum Biotech. The Durham startup is trying to use quantum computing to speed up drug development, and investors have bought in as the firm closed on more than $2.9 million in equity financing earlier this year. Polaris is developing a drug discovery platform using quantum computing, to speed up the process for pharmaceutical development by scanning billions of molecules quickly. The company's CEO, chemist Shahar Kynan, notes the vision is bold. Its website claims the firm will produce up to 100 drug blueprints per year, shrinking the lead time for preclinical drug trials from 5 years to 4 months. It's a question of finding the right problems, Kynan says, and it's been a big year for the firm, which recently announced a research collaboration with California-based artificial intelligence firm Orensa to develop precision medicine solutions for neglected diseases that disproportionately affect women. The company has also expanded outside the healthcare service with a maritime division, where its computing prowess can tackle dredging, salvage, and recovery consultation. Next, we have the company Lyra, L-I-R-A. The UNC Chapel Hill technology startup was co-founded by Dr. Andrew Prince, a head and neck surgeon who knows how heartbreaking it can be for patients facing life-threatening situations and are unable to communicate. The startup, founded out of a UNC entrepreneurship class, has a bold goal: to give the voiceless a voice. The team has been collecting voice samples through a website and is crafting an artificial intelligence tool that, if all goes as planned, could allow voiceless patients to be a part of their own medical conversations. Lyra recently took home first place at the 9th annual Big Lunch Challenge Pitch Competition, held recently at the NC Biotechnology Center, one of several wins is inked in entrepreneurial competitions. And number four, Protect 3D. Three former Duke University football players founded Protect 3B to ensure other athletes can keep playing and stay protected with custom 3D printed braces, splints, and pads. Co-founders Kevin Gaisman, Clark Bullitt, and Tim Skopik started making customized 3D printed protective devices while they were still undergraduate engineering students at Duke in 2018. Every device is designed by athletes for athletes, and we've trademarked the phrase compete without limits, because that's exactly what these devices allow you to do, said Gaisman, who serves as CEO. The company has worked with about 30 college and professional brands, including local universities UNC, NC State, Duke, and Wake Forest. It licenses its software and technology to athletic departments, who then purchase individual products, and it creates them through an iPad scanning interface app. And our next company, which is a fifth in case you're counting, is entitled Without a Trace. A lifetime of food allergies inspired the idea. It started with my own personal frustration with being unable to find on-the-go snacks that are filling, says Without a Trace Foods founder Brooke Navarro. Navarro quit her Wall Street job to go all in on the company, moving it to Raleigh and opening a manufacturing facility. The firm, which recently won a seed grant from the North Carolina Idea Foundation, faced an uphill climb. The food space is competitive, and right now the firm self-distributes its bars and power bites. But Navarro believes the market is there for her company to succeed. 1 in 4 Americans shop for allergen-friendly foods, she says. And Green Places is our next company. Green Places, through its technology, wants to be the chief sustainability officer for small businesses. It was founded by Alex Lassiter, whose last startup, hospitality platform Lassiter Technologies, sold to private equity firm Vista Equity Partners. Gaither says that during the pandemic, I spent a lot of time thinking about what I wanted to do next. I was really drawn to do something to put my strengths next to something I really cared about, he says. Green Places technology aims to calculate the carbon footprint of a small business in less than a minute. And then the subscription-based service can help small businesses figure out how to reduce their emissions. While it only launched this year, Green Places has secured backers who are well known to the startup scene. Entrepreneurs such as Jesse Lipson, Scott Wingo, Joe Colaby, and Chaz Felix and Todd Olson, to name a few. The entrepreneurs took a $1 million bet on the firm's success earlier this year. And our seventh company is Wrangle. Raleigh process automation firm Wrangle was founded by a pair of former co-workers at Automated Insights in Durham. Adam Smith and Adam Long had watched Tao as a startup's headcount grew, so did its complexity, forming gaps in communication. So they created Wrangle to cut through those layers. Founding the firm as the pandemic was started last year. The company, which scored a seed grant from the North Carolina Idea Foundation, took a pivot this year, rebuilding its product entirely in Slack. The move paid off, Smith says. It was featured by Slack as a top app earlier this year in a tweet. Smith and Slack had become the nerve center of organizations, and it's where all work is going to get done. So it's where Wrangle needed to be. And our eighth company listed is Flux Hybrids. The NC State University-founded startup is working on a technology meant to convert gas guzzlers into hybrid vehicles. Basically, we just take an electric powertrain and add it to your car's existing powertrain, co-founder Micah Ulrich says. It has the same gas power it always had. You can just now pull gas or electric. The company, which recently won a seed grant from the North Carolina Idea Foundation, is targeting its technology at commercial fleets. It's still in the testing phase, and the next few years will be make or break for the company. But if the farmer's bet pays off, if the founder's bet pays off, the company, which recently hired its first outside employee, can make a real difference in carbon emissions. It takes cash, however. The firm has raised more than $200,000 and is on the hunt for more. Ulrich estimates there's $250,000 more in the grant pipeline, and he's preparing pitches. The ninth company is Edix, E-D-I-X, the Raleigh Edge computing startup spun out of Raleigh's Six Fusion and has raised $24 million. The company has developed a platform intended to make it easy to write IoT applications using serverless computing. I beg your pardon. Its website describes it as dealing in a new kind of cloud at the near edge within the last 1,000 feet to billions of connected people, devices, and things. The firm recently partnered with Cubic Corporation to launch what it's calling the world's first Internet of Military Edge Things platform. Stakes are high for the firm's success, but so too is the competition. The company is pitted up against big cloud firms such as Amazon and Google. The tenth company is called Floodlight Software. Floodlight Software aims to digitize inspections and testing, eliminating the need for paper forms and filing cabinets. The company, a spin-out of enterprise mobility solutions provider Mobile Reach, creates what CEO Nazrin Azari calls an end-to-end field service product specifically for testing and inspection companies. They're trying to get rid of all the paper they use during their work and replace it with digital tools and digital processes in order to gain efficiencies and visibility into their operations, Azari says. And the market is broader than one might think, as practically everything is tested. Every piece of food you put in your mouth, the pipelines that run in your backyard, every component that goes into an airplane, she says. With Floodlight, those companies have an electronic record of the data they've collected, Azari says, which is particularly important for services that are also highly regulated. Company number 11 is Clearly, spelled K-L-E-A-R-L-Y. Clearly bills itself as an intelligent GPS for revenue-focused B2B marketing teams, giving firms the real-time confidence to know exactly which accounts to prioritize. Clearly, which closed in on $3.7 million in outside capital, uses data science and machine learning to help marketing, sales, and customer success teams understand how they're contributing to the business. And its CEO, Alex Krawczyk, has worked in both the analytics and marketing space as a former marketing manager at SAS and an ex-demand generation director at HireVue. It has had a big year, having been chosen to pitch on the main stage at Venture Atlanta in October. Our 12th company is called Levitate. Levitate's a company with serious entrepreneurial pedigree, as its founder, Jesse Lipson, also founded ShareFile, the firm whose $93 million acquisition brought Citrix to Raleigh. But Lipson's doing things differently this time. While ShareFile was bootstrapped, he's been pitching and winning major capital this time around. So far, he's accumulated $20 million in outside capital, including $8 million earlier this year from investors such as Bull City Venture Partners and Tippett Venture Partners. The 13th company, at Senna Therapeutics. The derm firm targets gene therapies to treat blindness disorders in children. It made headlines for a whopping $55 million raise in 2020 from the likes of Hatteras Venture Partners and Sofanova Investments, raising its total cash haul to $63.2 million. Specifically, it's targeting gene therapies for what's known as GUCY2D, assisted Leber congenital amaurosis, one of the most common causes of blindness in children. As Cena has licensed the exclusive rights to the gene therapy from French pharma giant Sanofi, and it's currently in clinical trials. The 14th company is ReflectMe, and Reflect is spelled R-E-F-L-E-K-T. ReflectMe. ReflectMe CEO and co-founder Toby Mitchell was inspired to found the company after catching her daughter smiling at a mirror, loving every part of herself. As a mom, I was like, whoa, I have to change the world for her, Mitchell says. ReflectMe seeks to do that while helping e-commerce customers better connect with customers and increase sales. The company works to help brands reflect their customers, not the size 4 stereotype. The company has created an enterprise solution intended to help commerce companies actually be representative of potential customers by allowing their sites to match the characteristics of the shopper, from size to skin tone to hair texture, in the images they show. Mitchell sees a bigger mission than just driving revenues, however. She sees representation as a way to promote empathy for other people. When humanity to you is only one color, is only one person, when people see one image, they just associate that with reality, she says. Company 15 is Courtrooms. Durham-based justice access startup Courtroom 5 began like many companies with frustration. Co-founder Sonia Ebron found herself in court, again, without a lawyer. And while she managed to figure it out in the end, she couldn't help but think about others in her position who didn't have the same educational advantages. That line of thinking had her co-founding Courtroom 5 with fellow former college professor Deborah Sloan. The goal? To make justice accessible. In societies where access to justice doesn't exist, you really ultimately have a problem with your democracy, she says. The firm developed a platform that helps an average person to do about 80% of the work, no lawyer required, and that's a big deal, as attorneys typically average $300 an hour and can spend upwards of 200 hours representing you on one case. Company number 16 is Earth Optics. Earth Optics, formerly known as Ground Truth Ag, is one of the firms to spin out of the AgTech Accelerator in RTP. The company, which counts chemical giant Bayer as one of its backers, is trying to be the Google Maps of farming, CEO Lars Dyrud says. The goal is to take soil measurements into the 20th century by using tiny soil samples to gain a glean a wealth of information data farmers can use to make decisions. The 17th company is Reborn Clothing. Businesses such as Delta Airlines and Peter Millar turned to Reborn to help transform their surplus branded clothing and textile waste into new products. The company, founded by Emily Neville when she was a sophomore at NC State University, was initially launched as a way for consumers to turn clothing from the back of their closets into something new, such as tote bags and pillows. Company 18 is Lolly. That's L-O-L-L-Y. Lolly's app allows users to earn free Bitcoin or cash when shopping at select stores. The Durham-based startup recently added $10 million to its coffers and has a lot of really big incentives in the pipeline, according to co-founder Matt Center. It's a critical time for Lolly as new competitors emerge every day offering their own take on their retail rewards. This is crypto, first and foremost, probably the biggest thing since the Internet, and we've got the easiest way to get people into it, he says. Current retail partners include brands such as Lowe's Home Improvement and Pop Sugar. Number 19, Finmark. The financial planning software firm has found quick traction. In 2020, 5 months after it was founded, the firm successfully closed on a $5 million seed round led by Durham's Idea Fund Partners. Part of investors' confidence can be tied to Rami Assad, its co-founder, who saw a successful exit with his last venture, securities software firm Distill Networks. Finmark, which participated in Y Combinator in 2020, aims to provide financial modeling for startup. And now we turn to the 20th company listed here, which is Prion. Exit expectations are high for AI firm Prion, whose founder Igor Jablokov sold his last startup to Amazon. That company, Yap, contributed the technology for what would become Amazon's Alexa. And Jablokov is equally bullish about his latest company, which he said has already spurred M&A interest. Prion released its first product earlier this year, an automated natural language processing platform for the enterprise. The goal was to add AI capabilities without having to have special skills. The AI enables AI assistants and chatbots to understand more and give more accurate responses, answering millions of questions and enhanced search capabilities. Company 21, Invention Therapeutics. The company is focused on therapies to combat inflammation. Its technology targeting autoinflammatory diseases such as rheumatoid arthritis, gout, and Alzheimer's disease. Invention is built around its first-in-class pan-inflammasome small molecule inhibitors, which the company said can provide for more effective control of inflammation. It's been backed by both the National Institutes of Health and the NC Biotechnology Center. And finally, our 22nd company is Diveplane. Mike Capps founded machine learning startup Diveplane after retiring, quote-unquote, as president of Epic Games. It emerged from stealth mode in 2019, pushing out what Capps has called trainable AI. Capps describes the technology as a black box for AI, a technology platform that allows machines to make better decisions and for their operators to actually understand what's driving those choices. And initially, it's targeting the autonomous vehicle space. We just closed a big deal, he teased a few weeks ago. I can't talk about it yet, but it's got our team humming. Now, that concludes the 22 companies that Triangle Business Journal is watching in 2022. These have not been listed in any specific order, certainly not alphabetical, or in the amounts of money associated with each of these startups, other than the fact that Triangle Business Journal thinks that these companies are going to go far in this coming year. And as we near the end of the Triangle Business recording for this week, this little item caught my eye. It's entitled Brownstone. Raleigh Hotel near NC State trades for $42 million. A hotel property in Raleigh that's been around for decades is being sold for more than $40 million. Raleigh Hotel Associates, LLC, an affiliate of Virginia-based Southerly Hotels, Inc., has agreed to sell the DoubleTree by Hilton Raleigh Brownstone University to CS Acquisition Vehicle, LLC of New Jersey for $42 million, the company announced November 30th. The hotel is located at 1707 Hillsborough Street near the NC State University campus. The 190-room hotel was built in 1966 and spans 136,000 square feet. Southerly has owned the property since 1998, when it was purchased for $7 million. The property currently has a total assessed value of $21.7 million. The hotel has 15,000 square feet of meeting space. The hotel was previously known as the Brownstone Hotel before converting to a DoubleTree from a Holiday Inn in 2011. At the time, the hotel had undergone a $4.6 million renovation. At the end of quarter three, the hotel had an occupancy rate of 42.7% for the year, compared to the pre-pandemic rate of 77.6% at the end of Q3 of 2019. Wake County's occupancy rate was 55.6% year-to-date through October, according to the Greater Raleigh Convention and Visitors Bureau. The hotel's RevPAR, that is, its revenue per available room, dropped to $46.48 during the same time span, compared to $108.26 2 years prior. The buyer is linked to New Jersey-based CSRE, a real estate investment and management company focused on multifamily properties on the East Coast. The company says its portfolio includes more than 3,500 units. It's unclear what CSRE has planned for the hotel property. Well, now we reach the viewpoint page of this week's TBJ, and the editor's notebook this week is entitled, Shopping Trend Could Spell Big Problems for Retailers. Following my column last week on the future of shopping mall math, comments from readers all over the country started filling up my inbox that seemed to focus on one primary theme, shopping behavior. While most agreed online shopping is playing a big role in reducing in-store sales in many areas across the country, the general theme seemed to center on the premise that American consumers will never stop shopping because our shopping behavior revolves around wants, not necessarily needs. But looking at some of the numbers that have come out in the past few days, one has to wonder whether we are in for a big shock in 2022. Dissecting these numbers is important because the U.S. economy is dependent on the American consumer. When we spend, the dollar changes hands. And the more the same dollar changes hands, the more the benefit to the economy. So first, the numbers. Black Friday sales were up, with foot traffic increasing 48% from last year, but still down 29% from 2019, according to Sensormatic Solutions. On Black Friday, people spent about $8.9 billion online. That followed about $5.1 billion spent on Thanksgiving Day, according to Adobe Analytics, that tracked 1 trillion visits on U.S. retail shops. But Adobe did mention the big sales days were down this year. Cyber Monday sales clocked in at $10.7 billion this year, a 1.4% decrease from last year. That number makes sense since people opted to go to malls and shopping centers this year. Many did not feel the need to shop online after the weekend. Collectively, fourth quarter retail numbers will still show a sizable growth, but things are already slowing down. So why should there be a need for alarm? That's because the American consumer is running out of money. After almost 2 years of receiving thousands of dollars in government stimulus funds, businesses getting millions of dollars in Paycheck Protection Program cash, and renters, leaseholders, and mortgage owners getting moratorium relief from landlords through government assistance, the COVID economy is coming to an end. And the Federal Reserve numbers on household debt and credit reflect that. This is the note from Fed's third quarter report. Total household debt increased by $286 billion, that's 1.9%, to $15.24 trillion in the third quarter of 2021. Mortgage balances, the largest component of household debt, rose by $230 billion. Auto loans increased by $28 billion. Student loan balances grew by $14 billion, coinciding with the start of an academic year. Credit card balances increased in the third quarter by $17 billion after an increase of the same size in the second quarter. Non-housing balances grew by $61 billion with gains across all debt types. Now, couple that with the inflationary pressures on goods and services, and a picture starts to emerge that may well be good for the labor market, but bad for retail. The Fed characterizes this as something of a normalization, but I think the Fed's missing the point. Nothing was normal during COVID. When trillions of dollars were force-fed in the economy, the dynamics of our economy have changed. The good outcome from this would be that if the U.S. consumer is beginning to amass more debt, he or she will have to get back into the labor pool to pay down that debt. Conversely, if we're spending all our money in paying down our debt, the economy will stumble because there may not be enough money left to buy new things that already are pricier than they were 2 years ago. Once the debt gets under control, we can then talk about real growth. Until then, the first half of 2022 should be a delicate time to watch for retailers. Well, that music means we've run out of time for today's episode. Hope you enjoyed it. I'm Elton Banks, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. So long till next time. Thanks for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.